Okay, so like imagine a time when just thinking certain things could like get you in serious trouble.
Yeah.
We're talking 1954, Cold War paranoia, you know the vibe.
Oh, yeah.
And this psychology professor at Vassar, Lloyd Barenblatt, gets caught right in the middle of it.
Yeah, it was a scary time for academics. I mean, just imagine like losing your job, your reputation, your freedom, all because of your political beliefs.
Totally. It was like a witch hunt,
Right.
right? And the House Committee on Un-American Activities, the HUAC, they were leading the charge. They were after communists everywhere, even in universities.
Right.
So for this deep dive into Barenblatt v. United States, we've got a legal analysis, a perplexity analysis, and a standard brief to kind of see how it all played out.
Okay.
And this isn't just some boring history lesson, okay?
Yeah.
This gets into like some really important questions about, freedom of thought versus national security, stuff we're still dealing with today.
Oh, absolutely. And this case goes right to the heart of the First Amendment. So Barenblatt's whole ordeal started when this ex-communist, Francis Crowley, named him during his own HUAC testimony.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Crowley claimed that Barenblatt was involved with the Communist Party back when they were both students at the University of Michigan.
So, like, this ordinary professor is suddenly public enemy number one.
Pretty much, and it really shows you how this fear was like seeping into every corner of society.
Okay, so what did Barenblatt do when they came knocking on his door?
Well, he flat out refused to answer their questions about his political beliefs, you know? He said they were violating his First Amendment
He
rights.
didn't, like, plead the fifth or anything.
No, he didn't. He directly challenged Congress's power to even ask those questions. That's what makes this a true First Amendment showdown. It's about the power of the government versus individual freedom.
So, like, what were these questions that got everyone so riled up? Were they, like, super personal?
They were definitely digging into his personal beliefs and associations. There were five key questions.
Okay.
First, they wanted to know if he was currently a member of the Communist Party. Second, if he'd ever been a member in the past. Third, if he knew Crowley as a communist. Fourth, they asked about this supposed communist group at the University of Michigan. And finally, they questioned him about his involvement with the University of Michigan Council of Arts, Sciences, and Professions.
So they were really trying to get all up in his business.
Yeah, they were trying to like paint him as this dangerous radical.
But the Supreme Court had to like step in and make a decision. They had to weigh Barenblatt's rights against the government's fears, right?
Exactly. It was a tough call. You have this individual's right to freedom of association and speech, but then you have the government claiming they need to protect national security.
So what happened? Did the court side with Barenblatt?
It was a close decision, 5-4, but they ultimately upheld Barenblatt's conviction for contempt of Congress.
Wow, so they sided with the government.
Yeah, basically, they said that the government's interest in uncovering potential communists outweighed Barenblatt's right to stay silent about his political affiliations.
That's intense.
Yeah.
How did they even justify that, with the First Amendment and all?
Well, the majority opinion really focused on this idea of the government's power to protect itself, even if it means like investigating individual beliefs. They called it the right of self-preservation.
Self-preservation.
Yeah, like basically, Congress has the authority to investigate anything they perceive as a threat, even if it involves someone's personal thoughts or associations.
I mean, I get that the court might give the government a bit more leeway when it comes to national security, especially during the Cold War, but like, where do you draw the line?
That's the key question, right? And the court did acknowledge that there need to be some limits on Congress's power.
Okay, so there were some guardrails.
Yeah, they upheld what's called the pertinency doctrine. Basically, it means Congress can't just go on random fishing expeditions, you know?
What do you mean?
The questions they asked have to be relevant to an actual legislative purpose. Like, they can't just grill someone about their beliefs for no reason.
Okay, that makes sense. So it's not a total free-for-all for the government.
Right. There has to be some justification for their actions.
But how did the court, like, square this with the First Amendment? How did they balance national security with free speech?
They came up with this new balancing test where they weigh the needs of national security against the individual's rights.
A balancing test.
Yeah, and unfortunately, during the Cold War, the scales often tipped in favor of security. Like, the fear of communism was so intense that individual rights often took a back seat.
So, like, even though there was this balancing test, it wasn't really a fair fight.
Pretty much. The court was definitely giving the government a lot of leeway in the name of national security.
So in Barenblatt's case, they basically said that the government's interest in rooting out communists was more important than his right to privacy and free speech.
Yeah, that's essentially what happened. They allowed Congress to dig into his past and his beliefs, even though it was a clear violation of his First Amendment rights.
It seems like a pretty slippery slope, but I guess that's what we're going to dive into, right?
Exactly. We need to unpack the implications of this decision and see how it shaped the legal landscape in the years that followed.
So, like, even though the court gave the government a lot of power to investigate, it sounds like they also tried to put some limits on it, right?
Yeah, they did. Barenblatt actually highlights some important constraints on congressional inquiries. Like, Congress can't just harass people or intimidate them.
Right.
There has to be a clear legislative purpose behind any investigation they conduct.
Okay, so it wasn't a total free pass for the government. Like, they couldn't just go after anyone they wanted.
Exactly.
But I'm guessing not everyone on the Supreme Court was happy with this decision, right?
Yeah.
Especially with something as important as free speech at stake.
You're absolutely right. The dissenting opinions in Barenblatt were pretty powerful. They give us a totally different perspective on the whole case.
Okay, let's hear about those dissents then. I bet they were pretty passionate.
Oh, yeah. Justice Hugo Black, who was like a huge defender of the First Amendment, he really went after the majority opinion.
Yeah. Did he say?
He called the decision a virulent form of prior censorship, arguing that the government just shouldn't be allowed to punish people for their thoughts or who they hang out with.
Wow. So he was basically saying, hands off the First Amendment. Like, this is a slippery slope, and it can be used to silence dissent on any issue, not just communism.
Exactly. Black was super concerned about this idea of a chilling effect, you know?
Yeah, like, if people are afraid to speak their minds because they might get investigated or blacklisted, then that's a huge problem for free speech.
Right. And he really saw these HUAC investigations as a way to suppress unpopular opinions and, like, create this atmosphere of fear, which could have a chilling effect far beyond just this one case.
That's scary. Makes you wonder if we've really learned anything from that period.
And then you have Justice William Brennan Jr., who also wrote a really strong dissent.
Yeah, what did Brennan say?
He argued that the real purpose of the investigation wasn't about getting information for, like, legitimate lawmaking, but more about publicly shaming and discrediting anyone they thought might be a communist.
So it was more about, like, making an example out of people than actually trying to uncover real threats.
Yeah, he called it exposure for exposure's sake, which I think sums it up perfectly.
It's like they were trying to create this spectacle to scare people into conforming.
Right. And both Black and Brennan were worried about how this whole thing would impact academic freedom, too.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, if professors could be dragged before Congress just because of their beliefs, wouldn't they be, like, way less likely to express themselves freely in the classroom or even do research on controversial topics?
Exactly. The dissents were really concerned about stifling intellectual debate and creating a society where everyone's too scared to think critically or challenge the status quo.
Wow. It's amazing how a case from the 1950s can still feel so relevant today. It's like we're still having these same debates about government surveillance, online privacy, and, you know, the limits of free speech in the digital age.
It really highlights how these tensions between individual liberty and national security are like timeless challenges. Every generation has to figure out where to draw the line, and it's never easy.
Okay, so even though Barenblatt didn't go his way, did his case have any lasting impact on, you know, how we think about these issues?
Yeah, for sure. So even though Barenblatt did uphold the government's power to investigate national security threats, it also reaffirmed some really important limits on what Congress can do.
Like what?
Well, for one thing, the court stressed that Congress can't use its power to harass or intimidate individuals. Like, there needs to be a clear legislative purpose behind any investigation.
Okay, so they can't just go on, like, a witch hunt.
Exactly. And the court also emphasized that any questions Congress asks must be pertinent or relevant to the purpose of the investigation.
Right. Like, they can't just ask random questions to try and trip people up or embarrass them.
Right. They have to stick to the issue at hand. And importantly, the court made it clear that they would be watching closely to make sure individual rights weren't being unfairly sacrificed just to achieve some political goal.
It sounds like they were trying to strike a balance, you know, recognizing the need for security, but also protecting individual liberties.
Yeah, they were trying to find that sweet spot, but it's always going to be a tough balancing act.
It's pretty amazing how one case can have such a ripple effect on the legal landscape. But even though Barenblatt lost his case, did his ordeal have any positive consequences?
It's kind of ironic, but yeah, in a way, it did.
How so?
Even though Barenblatt was convicted and his academic career really suffered, His case, along with some other similar cases, helped spark a movement for academic freedom and free speech.
So, like, his struggle helped pave the way for later victories for civil liberties.
Exactly. His case and those really powerful dissents brought a lot of attention to the dangers of unchecked government power and the importance of protecting dissent.
It's a reminder that progress often comes at a price, and that it takes courageous individuals to stand up for their principles, even when they're facing a lot of adversity.
Yeah, definitely. But it's important to remember that Barenblatt, even though its impact has lessened over time, hasn't been completely overturned. It still has implications today, especially when it comes to issues of national security.
So it's still relevant, even all these years later.
Yeah. I mean, the legal and political landscape has definitely changed a lot since the 1950s, but that tension between national security and individual liberty is still very much with us.
It's like we're always trying to find that balance, but it's so easy to tip the scales one way or the other.
And when we go through times of crisis or feel threatened, it's really easy to slip back into old habits of, like, government overreach.
That's a good point. So the big question is, would a case like Barenblatt be decided the same way today?
That's something to think about. So, while Barenblatt is still precedent, the legal standards for how we judge government actions that might infringe on individual rights have changed quite a bit since the 1950s.
So the game has changed a bit, right? Like, the government can't just say national security and expect the courts to just rubber stamp whatever they want to do.
You got it. Yeah, courts now are more likely to use what's called strict scrutiny when the government does something that might, like, step on fundamental rights, especially free speech and association.
Okay, so it's like a higher standard now.
Exactly. Strict scrutiny means the government has to prove that what they're doing is absolutely necessary, you know?
Like, they can't just say, oh, we need to do this for national security and that's it, right?
Right. They have to show that there's a really good reason, a compelling government interest is how they put it, and they can't just base it on vague fears or, like, suspicion. They need to show a real demonstrable threat.
So the courts are, like, making the government prove their case more thoroughly now than they did back in the 50s.
Yeah, they're holding the government accountable, especially when it comes to things that could mess with our basic freedoms. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this whole security versus liberty debate, it's even more complicated now after 9/11.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, we've seen a ton of new surveillance programs, all sorts of security measures, and laws that have people worried about losing their civil liberties.
It's like we're constantly trying to find that balance, you know, trying to keep ourselves safe, but not give up the freedoms that, like, define us as a country.
It's a tough one for sure. And Barenblatt is a good reminder that fear can be used to justify the government overstepping its boundaries. It's like a warning sign to stay vigilant and protect our rights, especially when things are crazy.
Yeah, it shows that the fight for civil liberties is never really over, you know? It's something we always have to be paying attention to and be willing to challenge those in power when they go too far.
That's a great point. The Constitution isn't like a suicide pact, right? It's there to protect our individual rights, even when national security is a concern. And the courts have a duty to make sure those rights aren't being ignored.
Okay, so we've talked about a lot today, from the Cold War to the specifics of the Barenblatt case and how it still affects how we think about security and individual rights. Any last thoughts before we wrap up this deep dive?
I think Barenblatt really forces us to ask some hard questions, like, where do we draw the line on government power? How important is dissent? And how easily do we give up our freedom when we're afraid?
It's definitely a case that has something to say to us even today. And for everyone listening, I'll leave you with this thought. Could something like the Red Scare happen again? Could our worries about terrorism, the economy, or other stuff that scares us lead us to give up our basic freedoms in the name of safety? Something to think about.
Yeah, good one. As we deal with all the crazy stuff going on in the 21st century, it's good to remember the lessons from Barenblatt. We have to find that balance between keeping our country safe and protecting the very freedoms that make it worth protecting.
Well said. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive, everyone. Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and stay engaged.